You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Fred Wilcox, professor of writing at Ithaca College. Professor Wilcox, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me on your program.
Professor Wilcox, would it be all right if I call you Fred?
Absolutely, definitely.
Now, Fred, you are the author of 7 books, and your most recent is Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The book details the history of Agent Orange and the consequences of this chemical. I want to go through this in great detail.
Okay.
I think probably the best place to start is, why do they call it Agent Orange?
Sure, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, that's fairly simple, actually. Agent Orange was a combination of two commercial herbicides that are generally called 2,4-D and 2,4,5-T. And they were mixed together in a 50-50 mixture in 55-gallon barrels. And then an orange stripe was painted around the barrels. Agent Orange was just one of several chemicals used in Vietnam, Agent White, Agent Blue, Agent Green. And they were all identified by just a stripe. They'd paint a white stripe, a green stripe, or a blue stripe, or an orange stripe around the barrels. And so that's how Agent Orange came to be called Agent Orange.
Thank you. Yeah, because I did read that, but I wanted you to explain it to the listeners, because I never knew it. And then when I read it, I was like, wow.
Yeah, sure. A lot of people, you start talking about Agent Orange, and they think you might be talking about a secret agent or something.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And then commercial herbicides mixed together and used to kill the trees in Vietnam.
Yeah. Yeah, now the history of Agent Orange, at least the American history of Agent Orange, seems like on page 9 you talked about how the British had experimented with chemicals in warfare. Is that right?
They had, yeah, and so had we a bit in World War II. So it's an old thing. I mean, you know, it's not new. These chemicals were used to a certain extent before Vietnam. But Vietnam in 1961, when we had several hundred advisors there, and people started talking to John Kennedy, who was president at the time, and telling him, I believe, that, look, the South Vietnamese army is not doing it. They're not going to defeat these people we call the Viet Cong. So we have to figure out a way to fight them, because they know, the Viet Cong know the territory. They know the jungle. They know the mangrove forest, and they can come out, which they did, attack, ambush people, and then hide, go right back into the jungle. So the decision was made to kill the jungle, destroy the jungles and the mangrove forest. And in 1961, the United States began experimenting with herbicides in Vietnam, see if they actually worked. We didn't use Agent Orange initially. We used some other chemicals. But it turned out eventually that Agent Orange was the most powerful herbicide. It killed the triple canopy jungle really fast. Killed the mangrove forest very fast. And so after we experimented with it for a while, we decided that it would be the best herbicide to use. And then we just started spraying it massively all over the southern part of Vietnam.
Right.
The Air Force flew these C-123s, the cargo planes that were retrofitted with the booms. They fly about 100 feet above the jungle. They were called ranchhanders. They were really pretty shot up. The ranchhanders were some of the most highly decorated pilots in Vietnam because they flew so low. But so they'd fly low over the jungle. They just go back and forth just like you were mowing the lawn. They would just go back and forth and back and forth spraying the jungles. Veterans always told me that in a matter of days, they might be walking through the jungle. The birds were chirping or howling and the monkeys were up in the trees, and then in a matter of days, the leaves would turn brown and the trees would die and everything inside, the monkeys, the birds, and the animals would all die. Which is always interesting to me, because it seems to me that if you're watching a chemical that will destroy triple canopy jungle and kill all of the animals inside of that habitat, it would seem logical to me, at least, that it might affect human beings who walk through those jungles or fight in those jungles or sleep out in those jungles or drink water and eat food in those jungles. And that's why I'm saying this, because when the veterans came back and they first started getting ill and complaining that they'd been exposed to this stuff called Agent Orange and that they thought their illnesses probably had something to do with exposure to Agent Orange, the United States military and the Pentagon and the Veterans Administration said, well, there's no evidence that this stuff would harm human beings. It was only meant to harm trees. How could you say that, that you could kill these massive trees and millions of acres of Vietnam's habitat and that it would not harm human beings?
I guess with a lot of good lawyers, that's kind of an oxymoron, right? Good lawyers means,
yeah.
Good lawyers really means bad lawyers because they're doing bad stuff.
Well, the extraordinary thing about this whole thing, David, is that all these years later, the chemical companies still deny. They still say there's no evidence that dioxin, which was the toxic chemical in Agent Orange, it's the most toxic small molecule known to science. Dow Chemical knew as early as 1965 that dioxin was, in their words, potentially deadly to human beings. So in 1965, they already knew that. They were already concerned about the toxicity of this dioxin. They continued to sell millions of gallons of herbicides to the United States military. They say they told the military. There's no evidence that they did, that what was in this Agent Orange. And all these years later, they continue to say there's no evidence that dioxin and TCD harms human beings. Well, there's a mountain of evidence. There's all sorts of scientific evidence. And I have a lot of it in Scorched Earth. It's there. I put the science in the book. It's not just my view or the Vietnamese view or a Vietnam veteran's view. It's a scientific fact that dioxin is deadly to human beings. They already knew what dioxin does to laboratory animals. And yet their contention has also been all these years, well, you can't extrapolate from what a chemical does to laboratory animals to what it does to human beings. And that's an absurd argument because that's exactly the way we decide whether a chemical should be marketed. Right. We don't take a group of human beings out and inject them with a chemical or a pill or something.
Not yet, right, Fred?
We already have. We did it in Vietnam. There are 3 million Vietnamese suffering from the effects of Agent Orange chemical warfare, and there are 500,000 children in Vietnam that are suffering from the effects. So if you go to Vietnam, this is another thing. I interviewed one of the most prominent scientists in Vietnam. Her name is Dr. Phuong. And I asked her, do you ever invite the chemical companies to come here to Vietnam? And she just laughed and laughed. She said, all the time.
Yeah.
And I said, do they come? She said, absolutely not. So they won't talk to you. You're one of the world's experts on the effects of Agent Orange on the Vietnamese people and on humans and on children.
Right.
He said, yeah, they don't talk to me. They won't come here. Yet, they have the audacity to stand in the United States of America in a courtroom and other places and say, oh, there's no evidence that dioxin, Agent Orange, harms human beings.
It was primarily Dow and Monsanto, is that right?
Well, there were 26 corporations making Agent Orange, but Dow and Monsanto are the best known. They're not the only companies that were making it. I think Dow is probably the best-known corporation. Monsanto is making the dirtiest Agent Orange. That is, their Agent Orange contained the most dioxin. Different companies had different amounts of dioxin in their Agent Orange. They weren't actually careful at all in how they mixed it. In other words, there was no quality control. They simply sold it to the military. The military put it in these barrels and then used it. The chemical companies weren't trying to necessarily limit the amount of dioxin in the Agent Orange. They say they did. And they say they were trying, but I'm sure there's any real evidence of it.
We believe corporations. Yeah.
I tell you, Dave, I don't believe anything they say. In fact, I don't mind saying this. They can sue me if they want. I doubt if they will, but they lie. Their scientists lie. They lie. And we all say, oh, it's just a matter of misinterpreting or interpreting information, Wilcox. And I said, no, there's a difference between you and I disagreeing on something and lying. A lying is just lying. They have to keep lying because if they admit what they did, the chemical companies say one time, yes, actually, we poisoned that little boy over there. The reason why he doesn't have arms or legs or the reason why he's blind or has a huge head is because we profited from something called Agent Orange. We didn't care. We sold it to the military year after year after year, even though we did hear complaints about it. And so it's our fault. And the minute they do that, well, they're going to be sued by millions of people. Not just in Vietnam, but all over the world.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. It wasn't just limited to the poor Vietnamese, whose country the leaders destroyed, but there were other countries, Australia, South Korea, Thailand, New Zealand, and the Philippines. Is that right?
All the veterans, they were Korean veterans, soldiers from New Zealand, Australia, and all of those veterans went home. After being exposed to Agent Orange, many of them began to complain of certain kinds of illnesses, very similar to what the Vietnamese were complaining about and very, very similar to what American soldiers are complaining about. So there's a pattern there that one could see very easily. Young men in the prime health, 18, 19, 20, doesn't matter what country they're from, take them over to Vietnam, expose them to this horrible substance, and a few years after they get home, they start to get sick. They get cancer. They get heart disease. They start to get other children are born with birth defects. But the other thing about that is that Agent Orange was used in Cambodia, probably Laos, Thailand, all over the place. And I focus on Vietnam because that's the easiest place to get the information. Now, I mean, I don't think that the United States government will admit yet that they in fact used Agent Orange and toxic chemicals in the other countries in Southeast Asia.
Right. They can't but admit it, right?
Yeah, they can't deny that they used it in Vietnam because there are 5 million acres of rainforest and other things that just haven't grown back yet.
Right. They're dead.
They're dead. The animals are gone. The elephants, the bears, tigers, the snakes, they're all gone. All the animals are gone. And what you have there were, you used to have these majestic, towering jungles. You just have something that Vietnamese call American grass. It's tall grass. And the only thing that lives inside the grass are big, fat rats. So all the animals are gone and jungles are gone, and people don't understand, who live maybe here in suburbs and cities, that the Vietnamese worship those. That was very important to their religion and to their way of life, to their culture. So it wasn't just destroying trees. It was actually destroying an identity in certain areas of Vietnam where they just stripped all of the vegetation away and left just nothing but grass.
So this began under President Kennedy. On page 10, you say President Kennedy approved the joint recommendation of the State Department and the Department of Defense to initiate a large-scale herbicidal chemical warfare campaign. Do you think that Kennedy, because a lot of listeners have a pretty favorable view of this guy, do you think he made the decision based on accurate information? Because it doesn't sound like the Kennedy that at least we're told about.
No, I don't think he made it. I mean, how could he? He wasn't a scientist. He wasn't familiar with what dioxin might do. He didn't know even what Agent Orange probably was because they hadn't really developed it yet. I think people simply said to him, look, you know, the whole idea that the domino effect, there was a discussion. People were talking about, some of the people in the government, I mean, they knew this was risky business in the sense that it might be violating international treaties forbidding chemical war and biological warfare. I think it was Rust that kind of convinced Kennedy and said, well, don't worry about it, because the Swedes or whoever, they might cry or they might complain, but basically it's not a violation of international law. Well, of course it was. If you look at the 1925 Geneva Accords, it's very clear that what we were doing in Vietnam was committing chemical warfare. Of course, it doesn't say in those Geneva Accords, it doesn't say herbicides. They didn't know anything about herbicides. So you could argue, in fact, the judge in a couple of these cases, the judge in the two major cases, Jack Weinstein, has argued that. He says, well, you know, couldn't have been a violation of international law because it's pretty clear that Geneva Accords don't say that. Well, no, they don't. But they say chemical and biological weapons, and Agent Orange was a chemical biological weapon.
Right. And, of course, I read all that about that judge and was dismayed that he actually got the second case.
Yeah, I have to laugh because I sat in the courtroom in both cases and I thoroughly investigated both cases. And the first case, I could say I could understand it a little better. It was 1983. There wasn't as much scientific evidence on the effects of dioxin on human beings. There wasn't as much information from Vietnam. It was early on in the Agent Orange tragedy. But the next case, 2004, when the Vietnamese sued the chemical companies for war crimes, then, again, Jack Weinstein was a judge.
Right.
And as you see in the book, when he says, basically, that the last 20 years of research, and the last 20 years of studies, the last 20 years of people going back and forth to Vietnam makes no difference. It just didn't make any difference. He still was not convinced, as he called it, causation. And you go into court, you listen to these people talk, the Vietnamese, and they're talking about their deformed children. They're talking about their dying. A number of the people that I saw one day in court, they all went home and died. Why would they be there? Why would they be making up these stories? Why would they come all the way from Vietnam to testify in a court if they were simply making it up? Well, they weren't making it up. But this judge, I don't think he should have been on this case. He was on the case. And, of course, he threw the Vietnamese case out, just like he settled the class action suit for Vietnam veterans. I think he's extraordinarily biased. I've read and studied his 233-page report on the Vietnamese class action suit, and there's nothing in that 233 pages. I encourage people to read it. It's not exactly fiction, but, you know, when some of it is, but it doesn't read like fiction. But there's nothing in that report that demonstrates that the Vietnamese didn't have a case. It's just Jack Weinstein's opinion.
And I think he's still around.
He is. And in some ways, you know, I've always said this about Judge Weinstein. He's very good on some things. He's very liberal and progressive on some things. He's been called a genius, a legal wunderkind, but not when it comes to Agent Orange. I sat in on the class action suit in 1983, so-called fairness hearings that he held after the out-of-court settlement with the chemical companies. And
right.
Those fairness hearings were a fraud. They were a joke. He held those fairness hearings. They were just pro forma. He wasn't trying to decide. He'd already made up his mind. He allowed the veterans to talk, but he showed an incredible ignorance of how the military works. He knew nothing about the United States military, and as far as I'm concerned, he didn't know anything about Agent Orange, chemical warfare, or even much about the Vietnam War.
I think, unfortunately, that's something common. When you get up to that level, I've spoken with Congress people who really do not know anything about the areas that are covered under their committees.
It's scandalous. It's horrible. I laugh about it, and I laugh because it's so appalling and shocking that people have the right to rule.
Right.
On something that they're not familiar with, that they don't know about. And what I'm saying here, and what I said in my book, is that how could it be that this judge, 20 years later, hadn't taken the time, or hadn't been required, if he was going to be the judge in the Vietnamese suit, to study
exactly
the new studies, to find out what kind of evidence there was?
How could he be judging?
How could he be sitting there determining that the Vietnamese could not prove causation? They could not prove that their illnesses and their ailments and their sick children it was because of Agent Orange. How could he say that when, in fact, he didn't seem to be familiar with the literature? He hadn't studied it.
One of the things that bothered me when you were talking about these fairness hearings was when he cut off that attorney, probably the most prominent attorney with Agent Orange. And then when you got up to speak, he made some kind of a snide remark like, well, why don't you run for Congress? Is that something to say to somebody who's dedicating their time here trying to help these people? Maybe if you brought in these deformed Vietnamese, and maybe if you gave him a jug of Agent Orange to go home with, put it right next to his bed and let him sleep with it, maybe then he would show some humanity. How could he say that about you running for Congress? Was he joking? Or?
No, he was just insulting me.
But why would he insult you?
Victor Yannicone is the lawyer you're talking about.
Right.
Victor Yannicone was the lawyer that the veterans respected the most. He's been maligned. He's been pillaged. Other lawyers have criticized him. But he's the one, the first lawyer took on the case, the Agent Orange class action suit. He's the one who got it going. He's the one who worked for the veterans. And he's the only lawyer that they really trusted. So during the fairness hearings, when he stood up to talk, by that time, Weinstein disliked him, of course, because Victor Yannicone was outspoken. Victor Yannicone never stopped lobbying for the veterans. And Victor Yannicone never stopped arguing that there was sufficient evidence, more than enough evidence, to convict the chemical companies and Agent Orange. So he was basically doing what judges can do, and that's ridiculing people and cutting them off. He cut me off in the middle of my testimonies. A group of veterans had given him a copy of Waiting for an Army to Die and encouraged him to read it right before the hearings opened. And they had told him that the book was their Bible, and these are hardcore combat New Jersey veterans. But he just ridiculed Yannicone, cut him off in the middle of his testimony, cut me off in the middle of my testimony, called me son and told me that if I wanted to make a difference, this was not the place to do it in the courtroom. I should go home and run for Congress. True
well,
story.
It bothers me. We were talking about Kennedy and whether or not he was fully aware of what he was doing. I guess you could even think about it like people back in those days smoked cigarettes without thinking that they did anything, right? So I guess maybe that type of mentality carried through with a lot of things.
I've been arguing for years, and I was just over at a bookstore in Massachusetts giving a talk. The really frightening thing about the Agent Orange tragedy is that science has failed the veterans. Science has failed American citizens. The legal system has failed us. The legal system has failed the people of the world because there's a cancer epidemic in this country. And I keep trying to explain that if you don't want to look at what happened in Vietnam and what is going on in Vietnam, if you refuse to acknowledge that these people are suffering, that millions of people there who are exposed to Agent Orange are suffering from cancer, or their children are being born with birth defects, then you're not looking at your own world. Most everybody here has friends, family who have died of cancer. I have some very dear friends who died of cancer, and some very dear relatives who died of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I have four children, and cancer studies show that 45% of American males are probably going to get cancer in their lifetime. 40% of women, well, that's terrifying. What that means is that one out of the four of my children could possibly get cancer. So that makes me very angry, and I know from all the research I've done, and other people know, we could cut the cancer rate down drastically if we clean up our environment. So the same people who poison the Vietnamese are poisoning us. The same people that killed the Vietnamese are killing us. And I want people to look at this and say, we need to take action to save our families, to save our friends, to save our neighbors, and to save our country. It's patriotic. It's someone's patriotic duty to understand what happened in Vietnam and to say, we just have to stop this. We have to clean up our air, water, and food supply and not allow corporations to poison us.
Right. And it seems like the way that I interpret it, it's only getting worse. It's not getting better.
No, it's not getting better because the Supreme Court, as you know, said that corporations are people.
Yep.
And so now they can basically, they already did whatever they pleased to our environment.
Right.
They can do whatever they pleased to our environment with absolute impunity. If people don't believe me, just read. Read the studies, for example, the Mount Sinai Hospital scientists there did some extensive research into the effects of toxic chemicals on children and the dramatic rise in cancer, certain kinds of cancers, brain tumors in children. And they concluded that these cancers were directly related to the toxic chemicals. It's the poisoning of our environment. These are not leftists, you know.
Right.
These are not people who are simply trying to bring down the corporations. These are people who've spent many, many years doing the research, and they don't say maybe could be either or. They say there's absolute evidence that children exposed to too many pesticides, for example, get certain kinds of cancer. Why do we need these pesticides? There are 80,000 chemicals on the market in the United States today, and an estimated 4,000 to 7,000 of those are carcinogenic. I would think that people would just wake up and be absolutely terrified and angry, very, very angry, as I am. I'm very, very angry that anyone can poison my world, your
right.
world. I just don't see how anyone has the right to do that for any reason whatsoever.
Right, and make all the money they do and are able to smile and celebrate while so many people are suffering.
They're interesting. I call them flak catchers. I debated the Veterans Administration officials, and I talked to Dow Chemical scientists, and their ability to deny is fascinating. And I think it's a human ability. A lot of people can do that. You just deny the reality of what you're doing. But I think it's up to ordinary people, people who want to live, people who want to see their children live and grow up and have a happy life, because people who work for the chemical companies and the government, they're not going to do it. They're not going to break through their denial. They can't, because if they do, they lose their jobs. And I understand that. And I understand they've got a house, they've got a car, the children are going to college. They don't want to lose what they have.
Right.
But what they don't seem to understand is they're going to lose what they have if they continue to poison our world. They're not exempt from cancer. Their children are not exempt from it. And there's no way that they can be safe any more than the rest of us.
I just don't understand how they could sacrifice people and the planet for profit, but I never did, I never will, but I guess it's the makeup of the person. You know, I'm page 66, Fred.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about in June 1985 with, of course, the Brooklyn Federal Courtroom being
right.
packed with reporters. Squeezed between beautiful women. For some reason, you said there were some beautiful women in there. Men with dark suits
mm-hmm.
and fat briefcases actually laugh as veterans testify.
Oh, they did. Yeah, they did. You know, sometimes, Dave, when I write, I think I'm making it up. You know, I have to test
right,
my numbers
right.
because I think, oh, no, I didn't see that.
Right.
I didn't hear that. But I did see that. I did hear that. And one of the ways I know that I heard that is a story there. It's one of my favorite stories, is a Vietnam veteran, a former Marine that I was sitting there with, who tapped one of those men on the shoulder and said, listen, the guy was very irritated. Yeah, what do you want? The Marine whispered, did you ever kill anybody? The guy said, well, no, of course not. And my friend looked him right in the eyes, almost nose to nose, and he said, well, I did. Now shut the fuck up. I love that story. It's an absolutely true story. This was a kid from Trenton, New Jersey, grown up there, gone over to Vietnam, fought the North Vietnamese, and he was one tough dude. The guys would get up there, testify, talk about their children being deformed, all these terrible things.
Right.
And these people were laughing. They were absolutely laughing. It's one of those things you think, well, maybe I'm hallucinating. I'm not really seeing this. I'm not really hearing this. This can't be. Nobody would laugh listening to a Vietnam combat veteran talk about their wife giving birth to a seriously deformed child. But they were laughing. And I stand by that story. And
okay.
I always will.
It's amazing. I guess probably they were shills. They were told to go there to change the somber, perhaps, feeling of the hearings, I guess.
Well, I think they were there to rub the class action suit in the Vietnam veterans' faces. Some of the lawyers that worked for the veterans, they were great guys. They really tried. But the chemical companies won. They settled out of court for $180 million. It sounds like a lot of money. It was chump change to them.
Right.
The morning of May 7th, 1983, when that was settled, that class action was settled out of court. And, of course, the veterans call it a sellout. They do not call it a settlement.
Right.
But when they were sold out, the chemical companies broke out the champagne. They were delighted. They thought they were going to have to pay a lot more money. It was going to be more difficult. So then they have these fairness hearings, and I think the people probably in those suits were representatives from the chemical companies who were saying to the veterans and their families, and to the American people, well, ha-ha, you thought that you were going to be allowed to show the world the effects of toxic chemicals on human beings. We prevented you from doing that. You did not get your day in court, and you're never going to get your day in court because we're more powerful, we have more money, we have more lawyers, and yeah, maybe you guys did go to Vietnam and fight, and maybe you served your country that way, but we beat you. We defeated you. And we not only defeated you, but we won the environment. The environment
right.
is ours. If
right.
you can't take a bunch of Vietnam veterans into court who are young guys suffering from all kinds of illnesses and their children are born with birth defects and prove that what they were exposed to is causing an illness, then basically you can't prove anything. It was a great victory for the chemical companies, not just over the Vietnamese and not just over the veterans, but over all of us, who would like to see a clean, healthy environment.
Of course, you even added it up, that $180 million came up to something like, here it is, it's on page 69, totally disabled veteran will receive $12,000. Widows will receive $3,700, and children are excluded. Yeah, of course they were partying, and the lawyers got $13 million.
Yeah, the very idea of setting that kind of value on a human life, any kind of human life. But again, I go back to these were people who pay the ultimate price. They saw their friends die. They were forced to kill people. They came home with post-traumatic stress syndrome. They came home ruined psychologically. And then to think that we, somebody, could set that kind of value on their life, $12,000 or $3,700 to a widow. How could you do that? I mean, how could anybody do that? How could anybody say that any human being is worth so little money, but particularly these men who did what they did, some of them against their will, but they did it anyway. I don't know. That's one of the most shocking things I think about the whole Agent Orange tragedy is that class action suit that's a sellout was just absolutely criminal, really.
Horrible. Kennedy started it in August of 1961, and of course, as you say in the book, the Vietnamese referred to what we call the Vietnam War as the American War, right?
They do. They call it the American War, yeah.
And the use of these horrible chemicals ended in 1970, is that right?
Well, that's official what the government says, that it ended in 70. Some veterans who were in Vietnam say, no, it didn't end. They continued to spray it with helicopters and all sorts of ways, maybe at least for another year. Nobody knew if the Koreans, how much they might be spraying, the South Vietnamese troops might be spraying. So officially, the plane stopped flying in 1970, but that didn't mean the United States government stopped using Agent Orange in Vietnam.
Right, I got you. And of course, officially, there was something called the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and officially, we were attacked by 19 Muslim cave dwellers on 9/11. So, yeah.
Well, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, I always say everything about Vietnam was a lie from the get-go, from the very beginning. It was all about lies. People say, well, we were drawn in there. Well, we had to fight the communists. Well, they tricked us. No, no, no. We went there. We knew what we were doing. We assumed the United States government, the United States military, thought we would go over there and we would defeat these little people in 6 months. One of the things that always just disturbed me is if the best and the brightest, as they were called, would have read just a little bit of Vietnamese history, they would have seen that the Vietnamese had been fighting somebody for centuries, and that they never gave up. They never stopped fighting.
They're making the same mistake. Look, McChrystal just came out today, and he said that we really didn't know anything about Afghanistan when we went in.
That has to be a lie, because otherwise these people are so stupid that they shouldn't be even driving a car, let alone running the military. They really shouldn't be on the street.
You're absolutely right. You know, the IRS is going to audit us for, you know, writing off a dinner for $32.10, but
right.
The day before 9/11, Rumsfeld comes out and says, well, geez, we can't account for $2.3 trillion. And then 9/11 happens, and where did that story go?
Vietnam was, before Afghanistan and Iraq, our longest and second most expensive war in American history, most divisive. And I thought, and I think a lot of people thought, at least we hoped, after Vietnam, the United States would learn something. We just wouldn't do that again. We wouldn't go somewhere where we couldn't win and invest human lives and kill hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people. But we just keep doing it. People, because I don't think the American people want this at all. That's a big lie. If we all had our say, we'd say no.
Of course. Polls show that. But unfortunately, it gets back to this money and power thing. And that seems to be an intoxicating force for these people.
When you look at the Vietnamese case, when they sued the chemical companies in 2004, again, I thought, okay, they have some very good lawyers. They have 20 years of scientific studies. The millions of Vietnamese are sick and the children are sick, and so they have all that information. I thought for sure that that was a win-win situation. But again, I underestimated the power of money. I underestimated the power of the corporations. I underestimated the power of people to lie and deceive themselves. And sometimes I look in my own mirror and go, what is wrong with you? Why do you keep underestimating the power of these corporations to lie and cheat and steal and kill? Because their power seems to be unlimited.
And the answer is simply that you and I and people like us are naive.
Yeah, I guess we are, because I really did think in 2004. But again, I sat in a federal court in Manhattan, and I watched the charade. This was an appellate court. I watched the Vietnamese come in, and I listened to their lawyers, and I've said in the book that when their lawyers were talking to the three judges sitting up there, when the chemical company's lawyers were talking, it was a nice little good old boy chit-chat.
Right.
Well, what do you think of this law? What do you think of it? Well, that's interesting. Oh, how do you interpret that? When the lawyers for the Vietnamese stood up, those judges were changed completely.
Right.
They were not friendly. They were basically hostile. And that was just fascinating. But I really wished at that point I had a camera to record the interaction there, because you have to be there to believe it. I can say, well, this is what happened, but oh, come on, those judges had to be impartial. No, they weren't impartial at all.
You would think that for such a serious profession, like a judge in a courtroom, they would want to have cameras there to have the whole thing open so the public could view everything.
That's what you and I might want.
Right.
But they don't want it, because if they had cameras that day or other days, it would be very clear to anybody watching it that these judges were biased, that they were much more friendly to the chemical company's lawyers, and that the Vietnamese were just going to lose. I walked out of that courtroom at the end of the day, totally exhausted, demoralized, depressed, and said, they're going to lose. I know. You know, everybody said, well, no, now we have to wait for several months for the appellate court. They're really going to weigh this information. They're really going to think about it. And I thought, yeah, they're going to think about it about 2 hours over martinis. Yeah,
exactly.
That's as long as they're going.
Exactly.
And
of course,
they've already made up their minds.
That's right. And of course, people need to realize that judges were lawyers before they were judges. So,
right.
Of course, they're going to have an affinity for these attorneys who are part of their good old boy network. And of course, talking about how things never change, on page 12, Congress votes 100 times for appropriations to continue the war in Vietnam and never votes to curtail or prohibit spending for the herbicide program.
Right. No, they never did. No. One of the things, I hate to say it, the late Philip Berrigan was my mentor, my friend, my father figure. I co-authored his autobiography. And Philip was one of those people, he was courageous. He spoke truth to power, is what he called it, speaking truth to power. There really aren't very many people around like that, because the judges, they have a vested interest. They like their gig. I don't blame them. They like those robes. They like the job. They like the food. They like the wine. They're not going to give it up. See, the minute they start questioning the chemical companies, the minute they start standing up and speaking truth to power, they're finished. They're done. They're going to lose their jobs. They're not going to get another job. They're going to have to go back to living a simple life, if they ever did live a simple life.
Exactly.
And I think this is the problem today. So many people have been corrupted by money and by things, and they don't want to give up what they've got. Once you get to a certain position, if you start speaking truth to power, it's like people in the FBI or the CIA or anywhere, these people who speak out. What happens to them? They get marginalized. They get ridiculed. They get fired.
Or worse.
Yeah, or worse. So we're living in that climate of fear here. It's a tragedy what's happened in the United States of America, because we pay all this lip service. We're the freest people in the world. We're the bravest people in the world. We've got a constitution. But we don't act that way.
Right.
We don't act as though we're free.
And the evidence is there for everybody to see if they would just take the time and open up their minds. About 2.4 million Americans served in Vietnam, right?
Yeah, approximately, yeah.
This whole Agent Orange operation from 1961 to at least 1970, probably beyond, let's say it lasted at least a decade.
Uh-huh.
It was the largest chemical warfare operation in mankind's history.
I would say that, as far as I know.
We talked before about this dioxin, the TCDD. On page 29, you talked about it going into the fatty tissues. On page 44, you talked about it going into the sperm and the blood and the milk. And, of course, when these poor moms breastfeed their poor children, they can get transferred through there. Give our listeners an idea about some of the birth defects.
One of the things about dioxin, TCDD dioxin, is, again, the United States Air Force early on said, well, it breaks down in sunlight and it won't stay in the soil, it won't stay in the food very long. But now, after all these years, some very, very reputable scientists from Hatfield and Company in Canada have gone over to Vietnam numerous times, and even recently they've found dioxin in the soil and the water and the ducks and the fish outside of Da Nang, for example, where there was a major U.S. base there. Now, dioxin isn't everywhere. It isn't all over Vietnam. Everybody in Vietnam isn't drinking water with dioxin, but there are what they call hot spots. And in those spots where the Vietnamese are living, they still, all these years later, decades later, they still find that they have dioxin in their fatty tissues. They still sometimes find it in their blood. They find it in the ducks and the fish the Vietnamese depend on for food. So people in certain parts of Vietnam are still ingesting food contaminated with dioxin. It's just absolutely amazing all these years later. Now, the thing that the Vietnamese most fear is that the dioxin is mutagenic. They don't know that for sure. Scientists haven't absolutely proven that, but I would say it is. And what they're afraid of is they have the third and sometimes fourth generation of children being born in Vietnam with missing legs, with huge heads, blind, missing hands, missing arms, seriously retarded. They continue to see these children, and so they're really scared. When will this end? How has it gotten into our bodies, the sperm of men? And they don't know for sure, but what they do know is they continue to see these Agent Orange children. They continue to see children that there's just no other explanation for why they're born with these kinds of defects. Moreover, they're patterns of defects. It's not like from village to village are different. No, you see the same things. You see the children who are born sometimes seemingly okay. They look okay. And then their heads start to grow, and their heads just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then they die. Or they're born up to a certain age, they seem okay, and they absolutely lose their ability to learn. They become invalids. So that's very frightening. You have a child that seems to be okay, seems to be normal for a number of years, and suddenly that child starts to lose its ability to go to school, ability to learn. Its nervous system seems to fall apart. There's so many ways that children in Vietnam, when you go to these centers, they've been affected. The retardation, missing limbs, missing eyes. There's so many things, but like I said, there are patterns, because everywhere you go, you'll see the same kinds of birth defects where Agent Orange was used very heavily.
Right. The first thing that popped into my head when I read this was, did anybody ask, were these type of birth defects present prior to Agent Orange?
Oh, the Vietnamese, no, they weren't. And there's a guy, I quoted him in Waiting for an Army to Die, the first book I wrote on Agent Orange, and then also again in Scorched Earth. His name was Dr. Tung, and Dr. Tung was a North Vietnamese scientist. He was actually one of the world's liver experts on liver disease. And he started studying North Vietnamese soldiers who had returned from the war and fathered children, and the children were deformed. And so Dr. Tung did some very serious analysis of the statistical analysis of how many of these children were born and where their fathers had been. And he concluded without a doubt that there was only one way that these children could have been deformed the way they were, and that's because their fathers were exposed to Agent Orange dioxin in the southern part of Vietnam. Dr. Fong, the woman I mentioned earlier, she said that before 1967, when she first delivered what she called a monster, the child that was so deformed that she took it in another room. She couldn't show it to the mother. She said, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't show this child. That was the first time that Dr. Fong had ever seen such a child. She was working in Tu Du Hospital in Saigon, which was a maternity hospital. And then after that, she began to see more and more of these children. And she told me she didn't know anything about what was going on in the countryside. She had no idea that the United States government was using this thing called Agent Orange, but she began to see these chemicals, and then she began to hear people talking about what was going on in the countryside, so she just put things together, and she concluded, well, there had to be a reason why she was seeing these horribly deformed children, because she hadn't seen them before, and so she concluded, well, the reason was that the United States government was inundating the countryside with Agent Orange.
And of course, on page 94, you talk about the research that was done in 1982 in Oregon by Dr. McNulty. So they pretty much know, the scientific community knows what this stuff does to monkeys, at least, right?
Dr. McNulty was experimenting with rhesus monkeys, our nearest living relative on the evolutionary scale, except for chimpanzees.
And right.
I interviewed Dr. McNulty, a very, very nice man, very nervous when he talked to me because he had gotten some dioxin actually from Dow Chemical, and he wanted to see what it would do to the monkeys. And he gave them what he called massive doses, and they died. And they died very quickly. Their fur fell off. They went blind. I mean, it was a terrible death. He was quite shocked at the toxicity of dioxin. He told me that. He was really horrified at how toxic. Well, there's an example. Rhesus monkeys, if they're very close to us, their DNA is very similar to ours. Wouldn't it stand to reason that if minute doses of dioxin kills these monkeys this way, that it would also harm human beings? I would think so. See, the thing about all this is the chemical companies will say, let's say about Vietnam, Dr. Fong's research, Dr. Fong putting together Agent Orange and the birth defects, they'll say that's all anecdotal evidence. One of their favorite expressions is it's all anecdotal. Total evidence. I'm sure that they probably looked at Scorched Earth, they looked at Waiting for an Army to Die and say, well, Cox, that's all interesting, but it's all anecdotal. That's why, again, I say that science has failed everyone. I mean, it's just a tragic example of how we need science. We need science to support us. We need scientists to come out and demonstrate that our environment is polluted and that this pollution is causing the cancer epidemic. But again, scientists are just human beings, and they're also extraordinarily cautious people. And I can understand why they don't want to just come out and say something if it isn't accurate and true. And some scientists have been very courageous and talked about the toxicity of dioxin from early on. But it just seems to me there's an overwhelming amount of scientific evidence that dioxin harms human beings, and therefore all products with dioxin in them should be banned from this country and from the world. And any company that's producing a product with dioxin, it should be, if they won't stop doing it, it should close down. Just close them down.
Somebody should get Judge Weinstein a copy of that McNulty research report.
He knows about it because he's read, I'm sure he's read Waiting for an Army to Die. I mean, I think so. I don't know what Judge Weinstein knows. All I know, and I'm repeating myself, is that if you can bear to read the 233-page document that he wrote after tossing out the Vietnamese lawsuit, you'll see that he doesn't really understand how monumental this tragedy is. Or if he does understand, he has some reason for refusing to allow the legal system to support the victims. I don't know. I don't understand it at all. I really don't, because I've studied it and studied it and studied the law and I've sat in the courtrooms. This is like if you brought in somebody who's accused of mass murder,
right,
and all the evidence is there, relatives come in and they testify, yes, I lost my daughter, I lost my son. But the judge says, yeah, but there are no bodies. I don't see the bodies. So I can't convict this man, because even though you say, the police say there's all this evidence, I'm not going to convict him because there's just not enough evidence. That, to me, is the Agent Orange issue. That's
right.
The way it is.
Right. It's not enough that if 3 million Vietnamese adults and 500,000 Vietnamese children were able to walk into that courtroom, that still wouldn't be enough for the judge.
No, it wouldn't be enough. And this is why I say, listen, if we can't prove that Agent Orange dioxin harms human beings, then we should close down the Environmental Protection Agency, close down the Food and Drug Administration,
right,
not give scientists any more money to pursue their research into toxic chemicals. Just forget all of it and save the money, because if we can't prove that Agent Orange harms human beings, then we cannot prove anything.
Right.
At all.
Another bad guy in this whole story, as is usually the case, on page 64, you say that veterans and their families are not asking for government handouts, and contrary to the media coverage of this case, it seems like the media is always there to toe the government line, toe the corporate line. Is that your experience?
Well, the media had this fixation with money, with compensation. I tried to say, look, there isn't any way to compensate a human being who's 28, 38, whatever, 40, young, has children, has a family, and has died because they were exposed to toxic chemicals in a place called Vietnam. You can't compensate people for that. It's an interesting question, because they seem to think that it's all about money. And I was on 100 different radio and television programs and news programs, and I always said, no, it's not about money. You have to understand what the veterans really wanted. All they wanted was to go into court. And they wanted to use themselves as exhibits. They wanted to show the American people and people throughout the world what happens to human beings when they're exposed to something like dioxin.
Right.
They wanted to do that. And I think that's one of the reasons why Judge Weinstein was so absolutely determined to make sure that that class action suit didn't go forward and they didn't get into court. Because once you see a young man who looks like he's 75 is deteriorating, or you see a young man who has two children and they're both seriously deformed, and there's nothing like that in their family, and genetically you can't. The only thing that happened to him is that he went to Vietnam and something happened to his sperm. So that's all they wanted. But I don't know why the media, they have this fixation on it's all about money and people wanting money. And of course, that's one of the things the Veterans Administration tried to say about these young men. Well, they were just after money. Well, I never met one veteran, one wife, one child, one person involved in this issue who wanted money. Yes, of course they needed money for their medical bills. Yeah, sure, if they couldn't work, they'd like to be helped. But the issue was not, is not, never has been about money. It's about justice.
You went to Vietnam, didn't you?
Yeah, I went there twice. I did research there twice. And the last time I went with my son. He took the photographs in the book. And we went all over Vietnam. We started in Hanoi. We went down to Da Nang, went to Hue, went to Ho Chi Minh City. So we were all over the place and talked to scientists and doctors, Agent Orange victims, visited the places where they keep the children, talked to the caregivers. And this is what I encourage everybody to do. If you don't believe Fred Wilcox, if you don't believe the vets, go to Vietnam and take a look for yourself. And then come back and try to explain, well, why are there 3 million people suffering from these diseases? Why are there 500,000 children with missing legs and missing arms and retarded? Just explain that.
Right.
Go and look, and then come back and give an argument. And I'm willing to listen to your argument, but I don't think you'll be able to give one.
And on page 78, you were just talking about what was the purpose of all this. And this really stood out to me, where you say, these mothers and fathers endure great hardship, but what concerns them the most is how their children will survive once their parents grow too old to care for them or die. Who will feed them, change their clothing, knead their arms and legs so they will stop screaming in the night?
Yeah, you see, that's another thing. The Vietnamese, it's very important to them to continue the family down through the generations. Some of those people have lived in the same land for hundreds of years, and they can go back. out to the cemetery and see great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother's or father's grave. So these poor people, they've had these children. The children can't take care of themselves. The Vietnamese mothers and fathers have to spend 7 days a week, 24 hours a day taking care of them. And it's bad enough that that's the end of their life. These children are not going to have their children, so they're not going to extend their family. But what they really worry about, and this is why I admire those Agent Orange mothers and fathers and caregivers so much, it's just so, to me, noble of them. They're not concerned about themselves. They're concerned about who will take care of their children when they die, because the children can't take care of themselves.
You said in Vietnam there really is no translation for the word I.
Right, yeah.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm.
It's so immense, the tragedy is so immense. You know, when it took my son, there were times when he would get sick, physically sick. He'd have to go outside of wherever we were and throw up. It's very, very hard to see. It's very hard to see because these children are so beautiful. They're such wonderful children, and it's just, they're not going to get any better. They're not going to be able to walk. They're not going to be able to go to school. They're not going to be able to have children of their own. They're not going to be able to get married. Their fate is established. They are just going to be crippled and blind and limbless until they die. You know, people have said to me, well, you know, this book, it happened a long time ago. Nobody really cares about the Vietnam War anymore. Nobody cares about the Vietnamese people. You know, I always say, well, maybe that's true. I don't know. I hate to think that that's true, but maybe it is true. But if you don't, if people don't care about the Vietnamese, if they don't care about the Vietnam War, if they don't care about U.S. Vietnam veterans, my argument is then they don't care about themselves, because what happened in Vietnam is happening here. And the effects of these toxic chemicals on the Vietnamese are the same effects on our families, our friends, and children. So to deny what happened in Vietnam and what is happening is simply foolish. And it's simply saying, well, it can't happen to me. It can't happen to my neighbors because we're Americans. We don't live over in that part of the world. But that's not true. We live in the world, and we live in a world that's contaminated by the same things that have contaminated the big parts of Vietnam.
Right. And of course, on February 27, 2009, the Supreme Court refused, and this is on page 102, without comment, to hear arguments on behalf of Vietnamese victims of Agent Orange. Where do the legal cases, are there any legal cases, Fred? Where does that stand right now?
That's a hard question to answer. I don't think, there might be, but I don't think they're going anywhere. When I was in Vietnam talking to Dr. Nguyen, there, Professor Nguyen, I was trying to get him to understand that it's pretty much over here as far as Vietnamese suing anybody. They might try it again. I don't think they're going to. But the interesting, his response was wonderful. He looked at me and he smiled and he said, we Vietnamese, he said, we've fought many, many wars over our history, and we've lost many battles. And then he grinned even more and said, but we always win the war. So I'm saying the Vietnamese may not have legal recourse, but I think they're not going to give up. Could be 25 years, 50 years, 100 years.
Right.
But they're going to continue to try to get compensation for the victims of Agent Orange, and they're going to try to continue to get justice for any and all, and that includes American today. They have nothing against U.S. veterans. They want them to be compensated and helped. And so I don't think they're going to give up. But how they might use the judicial system or how they might go about it, I don't know. I really don't think there's much hope there.
You were telling some of your Vietnamese friends about, and this is on page 57, as I said, you were telling some Vietnamese friends about the time a policeman in Washington, D.C. broke my leg, shattering my kneecap with his nightstick, and as I lay curled into a ball of agony, he threatened to kill me.
Right.
Can you tell the listeners about that? The reason I'm asking is how applicable it is to today with the protests that are going on, and it seems like nothing's changed. What happened in D.C.?
Well, that was 1971, and it was the May Day demonstration. Thousands of anti-war demonstrators had gone to Washington to close down Washington, D.C. We were frustrated. We were angry. We were bitter. No matter what we did, no matter how many tactics we tried, the government seemed to say, we'll just continue the war in Vietnam. We'll expand it. We'll continue to bomb and kill people, and we're not going to listen to anyone. Well, by that time, the anti-war movement was enormous. I mean, you could get 500,000 people demonstrating. But we decided that we're going to do civil disobedience, and we're going to block roads and things like that. My own feeling is, and of course I never talked to Richard Nixon, Dickie, but I think that Richard Nixon told the police, kill them, just go out and do whatever you want to these demonstrators, because it was extraordinarily violent. Most people have seen footage of Chicago in 1968, but the 1971 demonstration in Washington, D.C. was another police riot. They just beat the hell out of people. They ran over people with their cars. They broke people's arms. They broke people's legs. They broke people's heads. And that's the way it was. And has anything changed? Not really. If you look at the 2008 Republican convention in Minneapolis, St. Paul, was it St. Paul, Minneapolis, anyway, one of those cities, the police were extraordinarily violent. They just beat the hell out of people. They tear gassed people. They pepper sprayed people. And I'm talking about people who were not doing anything. In Washington, D.C., when I got my leg broken, I was standing with my hands above my head, on top of my head, shouting nonviolence. I wasn't attacking a police officer. I didn't say anything nasty to a policeman. And the same thing has happened, it seems to me, all over the country. When peace-loving people, peace demonstrators, people who have no intention of attacking the police, but only to express their First Amendment rights, come out on the streets, the police attack them, tear gas them, beat them, fire rubber bullets at them. In Wall Street, there are a lot of people there, hundreds, now thousands, and the police have been roughing people up there. Of course, the thing that demonstrators now have that we didn't have is they have cell phone cameras, can take pictures, and they have video cameras, and everybody has one, so it's a little harder for the police to do what they did to us. But nevertheless, even with all the cell phones, even with all the cameras, if you look at what happened in 2008 at the National Republican Convention, it was brutal. It was terrible. And I'm hoping that all of the public attention on Wall Street demonstrators that the police will not resort to that kind of brutality. But I was watching the news, and I just saw a policeman just grab this young woman and just throw her down on the ground. She sort of rolled, and then he walked away. And I thought, I really don't understand how in the United States of America that can happen. It really angers me. Yes, well, you can say, well, it's not Egypt. I'd say, at least he didn't shoot her. I don't care. He doesn't have a right. Nobody has a right. An American citizen standing there peacefully, she had a camera in it, to just walk up and throw her down or knock her down. No, I object to that. I think that's totally wrong. I'm hoping at this point that there will be an uprising in this country. I'm hoping that people will go out to the streets. I'm hoping that people will stand up and say no to Wall Street, no to these CEOs, no to these banks that have been robbing us blind while people are being thrown out of their houses, made homeless, losing their jobs, are desperate. I really hope that it's time for the American people to do what people did in Egypt and Tunisia and Libya and just stand up and say enough is enough. We're not going to take this anymore. I totally support the people in Wall Street, and I hope that the police will refrain themselves from attacking them.
And you, in fact, are heading down there this month, aren't you?
There's a book launch party for my book on October 17th in New York City. I'll just say that party is at 4 o'clock, and it's in a place called Housing Works. It's up on 96th Street. Any of your listeners who want to come up, come on up. Noam Chomsky is going to be there, and he and I will be talking about this issue, and I hope other things. After that, I'm going to go right down to Wall Street and join the demonstrators.
That's great. Where can listeners get a copy of your book? Where's the best place for them to get it?
Well, it should be out in most any bookstore. It's published by Seven Stories Press, and if they can't get it in the bookstore, they could certainly order it through the bookstore. You can also get it on Amazon, but I prefer people go to the bookstores and support their local bookstore if
sure.
they can. I'm sure you could get it through Barnes & Noble, but most anywhere, I would think.
Fred Wilcox, professor of writing at Ithaca College, author of his seventh book, Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam. I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. I thoroughly enjoyed myself. It's a topic that everybody should really get to know because it touches on a lot of facets of humankind and what's happening in this country today. I highly recommend it. Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam by Fred A. Wilcox and the photographs by your son, Brendan Wilcox. Fred, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thank you for spending so much time with me. I appreciate it, Dave, and all the best to you.